Hello, welcome. This is Gary Rogowski for Splinters. Thank you for joining me. Today's chat is about a series of experiences I had in my youth as a woodworker. When I started, I felt completely ignorant of this field I had endeavored to learn about. It was astonishing, really. How ignorant I felt. I knew there was so much to learn about tools and machinery and then wood. I mean, there was all that. And then there was finishing, which was a complete mystery to me. And then design, hardware, dovetails. There was so much. It was just after college for me, and my head was filled with, poetry, debate, maybe just a little bit too much weed in my head. So my woodworking skills were not, shall we say, fully honed yet. There was a ways to go. As luck would have it, though, after graduation, I found work with a guy named Harvey Roney. Harvey was a great boss. We poured concrete, flat work, mostly, sidewalks, driveways, some foundation work. But anyway, I moved wheelbarrows of sand and wheelbarrows of mud and helped Harvey frame things up. And Harvey also thought of himself as a Renaissance man, as any concrete worker might. Consider that the Romans had built their domed Parthenon with concrete, after all. So Harvey made himself furniture. He had a little garage shop, and he took me in there once and showed me this coffee table he had made. He stole a design out of the Sears and Roebuck catalog, which we used to get back then, and made this coffee table. And I thought to myself, wow, if Harvey could do this, maybe I could do this. What if I got out of this concrete game? I mean, it wears you out. And then what if I got into something like this world of craft? It was the time of the craft revival. You could see some work here and there. So it was very intriguing to me. Now, pouring concrete had increased my love for the Romans, no doubt. But what if I tried this? What if I tried something just completely different? At the time, the reasons were legion why I should not do this, but luckily ignorance and youthful arrogance won the day. I convinced myself that this challenging new path posed no problems that I couldn't overcome. Besides, it wasn't a real job because I didn't make but a few bucks for my first designs at the craft fairs I attended. The idea of diving into something so counterintuitive appealed to me a great deal. Part of my long, self-directed apprenticeship was to go to the Sears store on Grand Avenue and up to the second floor there to stare at the wall of tools, a huge wall of tools. I tried to figure out what they could do. I could have been staring at the Rosetta Stone for all that I understood of them. I didn't buy many because I couldn't afford them, but I would go to look, to study, to try to decipher what magic these tools held. They seemed to speak to me. They seemed to say something that, or something in a language I didn't quite yet understand. Now, I started to put together my hand tool kit from the few tools my father had given me and the few Stanley chisel I could afford. I found my Sterrett protractor and depth gauge at a junk shop, $5 for each. Even made a little walnut box to keep them in. But the tools remained more of a mystery to me than anything else. All these saws and chisels and jigs and paraphernalia. I would stand and gawk, reach out a tentative hand to touch one, and try to let the knowledge fill me by standing close enough to these desired objects. What could they do for me? I thought it could work. It does not. What does work is using them, making mistakes, trying it again. This occurs so often at the bench, you don't even notice it. You start shaping something and you say, oh, that's not right. So I gotta move my body. This isn't working. I have to move that piece in the vise. It's impossible to get to at this angle. You're constantly making adjustments. And that's a part of the experience that we gain. But if we fast forward some decades and look into my curiosity about tools, we'll see that it has turned into a full-blown sickness. I now have to announce to my students, hello, my name is Gary. I have a problem. I buy tools. But you know, when you see one you like, you kind of have to buy it. You may never see another one like that again. It's just how it is. I'm a tool junkie, I admit it. But this is the first step, this awareness. This is the first step to buying more tools. But I really do believe there's power in these hand tools, magic in their grip. They have a potential that my laptop does not have for me. It's an incredibly powerful tool, but the look of a hand tool, the feel of the hand tool, and particularly used hand tools, maybe there's a mark on them or some carving or initials, it speaks to a past and a history. I've learned much about these objects. I have a little photo in my tool cabinet. It's a picture from a museum announcement. It's called Power Tools, and it's a picture of an arrowhead in the shape of a wedge. And so on January 31st, this year, 2026, I will be giving a chat on hand tools. Now, I've divided things up into three big groups. I'm kind of missing on clamps and things, but wedges, all of our cutting tool are wedges. Hammers, things to pound with, always important. And then rules, and I don't mean rules for living, I mean rules for measuring. And I'll come up with, I say 10 in each category easily that I think should be in your kit. Currently, I'm looking at, like I said, dozens and dozens of chisels and hand planes and saws and scrapers and files and rasps, spoke shaves, and my goodness, all of these are wedge tools. That wedge shape creates so much force. That's how we cut, that's how we shape, that's how we plane. Our sandpaper is wedge shaped. The list goes on. Hammers are, of course, an important tool throughout our history of humankind pounding on things, starting with rocks, but then figuring out a way to get more leverage and power by tying a handle to it. Right now, I think I've got 6 hammers in my tool cabinet, but there are a couple others that I'll mention. The measuring and marking tools, the rules section, is a fascinating one to me because there's so many ways of measuring. String was used for centuries. That's how they built the pyramids, was with string. It's impossible to imagine. Plumb bobs to get plumb, to figure out what's square to the earth. Water levels to figure out level. Very simple tools. But they've become much more precise and specific. So there are angle tools that are adjustable for any angle, or there are protractors that can measure through 180 degrees. There are hook rules and small 6-inch rules, squares from, I'm going to say there's probably something smaller than a 4-inch. That may be a 3-inch square that, or a 2-inch maybe, that Sterrett puts out for measuring things. That combination square is such a valuable tool. But there are other types of squares, the carpenter square, the tri-square, the list goes on. But our need to be precise, relatively precise, in our woodworking is an important one. I could spend hours discussing each category, but I'll give an introduction to these fabulous items and discuss the value of good tools, the value of used tools, and which tools I find essential for my kit, and maybe perhaps for yours. This will be a great opportunity to stand and stare at a wall of tools with me as your interpreter, as I did not have at the time. I hope you'll join me and Harvey and the others like us who have found these tools and their language irresistible. Thanks for joining me. This has been Gary Rogalski for Splinters. Please check out our website at northwestwoodworking.com. Check out my Substack. And check out the website for information on our online mastery program. We're in our 7th group. It's hard to believe. Thank you for supporting me. I appreciate you listening. Take care. Adios.